阅读、科技、旅行，
生活可以很大，对话设计、学习，思考不嫌太多。这里是 iTunes 获奖播客《狗熊有话说》，一听就停不下来的哦。Hello， 大家好，这里是知识型学习脱口秀《狗熊有话说》（Bear Talk）， 我是主播大狗熊。在前个星期的一天呢，我去了新西兰，目前在科技方面做的最好的一个播客节目，叫做New Zealand Tech Podcast。那么去做了一期嘉宾。做嘉宾这件事儿啊，之前在国内经常操作啊，就是大家可能经常会听到我在有的聊呀、大内密谈呀、这个其他的这些节目里面客串啊、什么这个集合网啊，什么都去过。但这一次在新西兰这个节目做嘉宾的不一样之处呢，在于它是一个纯 Kiwi， 就是纯新西兰本地的这个科技人士主持的一个节目，而且做的还很正式啊。那么毫无疑问，它的官方语言呢是英文。那么这是我第一次参加一个纯粹由洋人主持、纯粹由洋人进行这个采访和闲聊的一期播客。那么算是一个新成就的达成。那么在这一期《狗熊有话说》里面，我和你分享一下，首先呢聊一聊这期节目在录制之前的一些花絮，那么之后呢我们就来具体听一听这一期节目我在 New Zealand TED Podcast 里面和他们聊了一些什么样的话题。先简单介绍一下这个 New Zealand TED Podcast 这个节目啊，这个节目呢，它的创始人叫做 Paul Spann， 那么是一个胖胖的、宅宅的啊，戴着一副眼镜、很可爱的新西兰大叔，那么一看就像国内在中关村啊、这个海淀区啊这样的一个科技宅的这样的一个形态。那么他的这个节目呢叫做新西兰科技播客，那么其实创始的时间呢比我要稍微晚一点，应该是2010几年，但到现在也做了400多期。那么现在他在新西兰呢有自己专门的这个公司和办公室，专门在运作相应的这个音频的这个节目。那么基本上新西兰的涉及到科技或者说奥克兰吧，奥克兰涉及到技术类的一些公司的嘉宾呢经常会作为他的这个 guest 来到这个节目里面和大家聊各种方面的话题。那么我和他怎么认识的呢，是在这个之前有过一些这个 LinkedIn 上的一些闲聊，然后后面呢我有和他讲过我在国内也做播客。那么在录制节目之前，回国之前呢，去到他的公司里面去拜访了一下，然后呢交流了一下。后面他说，哎，那要不的话这个等你从国内回来咱们也来传一期节目啊。然后我其实也想邀请他到我的节目里面呢去聊一聊他怎么在新西兰这样的一个地方呢把自己的节目做成一个能够有团队在支持去运作的一件事儿。他现在的这个节目下载其实一般啊，因为整个新西兰大家想全国也就480万人。那么他的节目呢前段时间刚刚过了下载量过了100万啊，这个还在庆祝。那么像我的节目现在200多期，也是2000多万的这个下载啊，跟这个体量不能比。但就是他有一个全力的一个团队在运作，然后每一期节目呢现场有2名导播负责这个音频采集的技术人员，还有另外一个在 FaceTime 在 Facebook 上做直播同时有2个机位互相切换，非常非常的专业。那么大叔呢也经常会接到一些这个科技公司发来的新产品的测试啊等等，反正做得很到位。我也很好奇他怎么运作自己的这个自媒体的这个渠道的。那么具体就开始了这一期的录制了。那么录制之前其实是这样， 我在当天上午，哎，还是前一天，前一天有收到大叔发来的这期节目的提纲，那么都是已经在线文档编辑好，然后呢，我们作为嘉宾呢，也可以在线去添加内容啊，那个 Google Doc，应该是用这个 Word 365啊，这个微软的这个在线文档，然后就整理。那么另外同时参加这期节目录制的呢，还有另外一名嘉宾，是来自于新西兰的电视台 Sky TV 的这个官方发言人。那么之前是以记者啊，之前是以律师的身份也是刚刚加入 Sky 啊 Sky TV 不久，天空电视不久的一位女士。那么英国人啊，这个讲话非常的严谨，而且这个大家待会儿听节目的现场的这个英文录音就知道了。那么他讲英文的这个感觉，我觉得非常容易听懂不愧是这个之前是做律师的。那么他主要想带来的话题呢，除了关于 Sky TV 之外的一些话题之外呢，还有内容盗版方面的一些话题。那么在现场呢和大叔分享。那么我这边呢，其实更多是作为一个以不同视角来提出自己的见解。其实本来呢，我想在这个节目里面，刚好在国内我录制节目的时候是发生了这个滴滴顺风车的这个事件，那么想在这个节目里面和洋人和 Kiwi 分享一下，就是我们现在国内的一些动态，还有中国的经济发展或这个互联网移动支付呀等等这些目前的一些现状和我的一些观察和理解啊。因为老外洋人，如果大家知道，洋人看中国都是那种哇好大，然后这个规模好好多，然后但真正背后的一些东西他们看不太透彻。那么我可能本来是想分享一下这些方面的这个见解，但就像大家以前听其他中文播客一样啊，都是那种一讲起来可能这个事儿就巴拉巴拉巴拉巴啊，就一个小时就过去了。那么这期节目也是一样的，所以更多呢，我作为嘉宾呢，只是作为中国的视角提了一些自己的看法。那么待会儿呢，我们来听一听原因。OK， 那么废话就不多说了，因为这期节目的英文录音呢有一个多小时呢，全文都是英文的，我就不全文翻译了。那么我也会在过程中呢，放这个英文音频的过程中呢，觉得自己感兴趣的一些点，我会用中文再和大家讲解一下，但更多呢还是以英文为主。OK， 那么我们就来听一听这期在New Zealand Tech Podcast 上面大狗熊和主播 Paul Span 还有另外的嘉宾Sophie 我们三个人的一些观点见解，对于现在科技趋势的一些看法和一些新闻的自己的感受。 OK， 我们开始吧。
The New Zealand Tech PodcastBrought to you by Gorilla Technology, proactive and strategic IT.
Greetings and welcome along to the New Zealand Tech Podcast. We're at episode 403. Now, two guests today, Sophie Maloney, Sky TV. Welcome along, Sophie.
Thank you, Paul. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. And Bia Lu, who's just come back from China.
Yeah, it's my first time here, and thank you, Paul, to have me. Yeah.
Well, it's great to have you both on the show. Sophie, maybe you could just fill guests.
这个时候我开始在做节目的时候非常的紧张，因为怎么说呢，就是毕竟第一次啊，然后和洋人讲英文的感觉和中国人讲英文的感觉完全不一样。那么还好这两位主播他们的英语呢，我基本上能够跟得上啊，全神贯注的话能够跟得上。然后大家可能不太听新西兰英语口音的朋友会觉得，诶，新西兰人讲话这个到底是英式还是美式。那么打个岔啊，他们属于介于比较偏英式的这种英语。另外呢，他们在讲话的时候为了礼貌的问题呢，经常会用一些声调啊，就叭叭叭叭叭叭叭叭叭，那么这样的去讲话。 不像大家在电视剧啊美剧里面看到那种叭叭叭叭啊这样的这个以降调的形式来结束。
It's obviously a challenging time in the media landscape. So for me, it was a great time to get back and be part of the Sky team.
That's great. Well, thank you for joining the show. Looking forward to diving in and chatting a bit more about what's happening in the Sky world during the show. And Bear, we just met up, would have been probably a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
And I noticed that you've been podcasting in China, and then you've moved to New Zealand and working in the tech world here. Mm-hmm. What else should we know about you?
Yeah. Hi, guys. My name is Bear Liu. And as Paul said, I'm a podcaster. Which is challenging, but I found moving to a new country is more challenge than that. So I moved to New Zealand two years ago with my family. I used to be a UX and UI designer in China, which involves a lot of iOS apps developing program. So, but now I work for a health supplement and beauty e-commerce company in New Zealand and in charge of marketing, so which is a totally different career path. So yeah, it's actually a long story for my poor English, so I just make it short. Yeah, just and the other thing which about me is I'm a podcaster in China for almost six years.
A highly awarded podcaster.
我和他进入互相恭维阶段啊。他既然夸了我，我也准备夸一下 Paul.
Podcast Bear Talk, in 2012, and now it's just released 288 episodes.So yeah, but not as good as you. So
stop it. You've got a much bigger audience than we have. So, that's good. Well, looking forward to chatting a little bit more and, in future, sort of, getting some more perspectives on China. Yeah. And the other thing, I think often we sort of look into China with an outside perspective, but don't really understand all the perspectives. So it's kind of, really nice to be able to draw into some of your perspectives on some of these topics.
Yeah, it's really
so good. Let's jump in. Now, there's always lots of news to chat through. We've tried to keep it reasonably short so we can dive in and talk a little bit about China and about Sky. Yep. First up was a story that one of the team here at Gorilla had mentioned to me that was in the media. Craig Harris, who's been on the show before,
他这个节目啊，就是 New Zealand TED Podcast 的结构，基本都是一开始呢会介绍一些目前正在发生的科技界的新闻，然后呢会根据这些新闻呢，嘉宾分别以自己的一些角度和观点分享一下自己的见解，之后呢会有一些针对嘉宾的主题。其实这个结构我觉得还是挺像咱们以往常听的科技节目啊，像有的聊其他的这些科技节目都差不多。
We're aware in the past that sometimes, courts have insisted that somebody's name be suppressed in a particular case.And then using whatever mechanisms that information has leaked out anyway, even though maybe the mainstream media haven't covered it. In this case, the scenario that we were alerted to is basically one where you've got two defendants, and one was having was suggested one should have name suppression, the other should have the name suppression lifted.And the request was that actually they should both stay suppressed, because if one name got released, then by searching for that person, actually people would be able to figure out who the other person was because of what some of the search results were, which is kind of an interesting scenario. We haven't seen anything quite like this before, but we've certainly seen names leaked when the judge says that they shouldn't.And then other things that sort of get passed round through sort of, online back channels, shall we say.
And where was this? Where was the court order or the suppression.
So this is a New Zealand case. Now, the link that I originally had seems to have broken. So I'm just trying to find. The full details on it, but this was a New Zealand, New Zealand situation, and yeah, you know, I guess you know we don't have too much control here over what Google does and doesn't show.
No, that's true. I mean, that's the thing about the laws; they govern the country, so all of the media here might play ball, but the search results that Google, and because of the intelligence that sits behind that search engine, which is great, it makes all of our lives, you know, much easier in many ways. It does create these other moments, and hopefully we might come on to the piracy story, because that's one of our issues, is that actually when you start to search for things, the autocomplete and the power of that search engine will immediately lead you to places that, you know, legitimate service providers don't think you should be. And I think the name suppression one is quite interesting. You're right, because they search on one, and up pumps the other name. So I think it's a really interesting way of managing kind of traditional legal means and media with these global tech giants and the power of those search engines.
I imagine, Bear, in China this will be different, because you know the search engines and what happens online there is much more regulated from, you know, a government, you know, perspective, right? So, you know, if the government felt that there shouldn't be a result that was being shown, then they have a lot more control than we tend to have in most other parts of the world.
Yeah, I think it's on two sides. On the first layer, we thought China government controls all the informations of internet in China, which actually is quite true, because any sensitive political informations will be reviewed by the government first. But now on the same layer is that people in China is already know there are two things on internet. So if you try to search with Google or with other search engine outside China, you will find totally different result. So
that they're blocked entirely.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah. So yeah. So it's just like in China, like Baidu. It's a search engine in China, and they will try to change their way of display to make sure that the top result is selected by some purpose. But I think from a technology perspective, maybe the name suppression is hard in internet age, but it could be easier in the blockchain age. Ah. Because later, when we adapt blockchain, the whole internet will move it into another level. So all the things are decentralized. So it could be a better future for us. But right now, it's just you have to get used to the real thing, the real world.
It's interesting you talk about blockchain, because I've been asked about that before in the, you know, the anti-piracy content protection space, and people seem to think it might have legs, but I don't have the technical expertise. But I'm really interested when you talk about the, I suppose, the censorship piece, whether you have had any issues with podcasting with the topics you're covering, or maybe it's not as full on as that in China.
I think it's in podcast content.
Yeah, no, just wondering if you've ever had any issues, or, you know, you've done podcasts and people maybe, you know, if they've got this kind of oversight in China, I wonder if it creates any moments, or
have you had the military police turn up after you've recorded a podcast, Bear?
Yeah, I'm trying not to, to get involved to that scenario. Yeah, but that's kind of, it's also, when I'm doing podcasting, there are some sites they will use my audio content and without permission from me. But as a personal podcast, I don't have ability and time to stop it. And which I think probably it's also not that bad for me, because get more people to.
And you distribute it free anyway, right? So somebody else redistributes your podcast.
Yeah.
Although you would prefer to control that, It's not quite the same, you know, although it's, you know, sort of copyright to you, it's not the same as though, you know, you were making a living based on every person that listened.
It's of course, podcast content, I think, it's just for free. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that concerns, I have concerns about it, is I don't have any traffic or analytics about the audience, who the feedbacks from them. And if I'm doing something, some content for commercial, like if I sell some webinars or online courses, and it will be, I would become very curious or serious about the piracy.
Yeah, you want to know the stats for every. You know, every download, and so if somebody else is copying it, distributing it through another mechanism, you don't actually know how big your own audience is, and
that's true.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And you know, talking of podcasting in China, and you know, even here, because you know, I imagine you want to keep going back to China. Mm-hmm. Do you know? Is there a level of sort of caution that you have to, you know, carry with you when you're talking on a podcast while you're in China or even here, mm-hmm. where you would just think through what perspectives that you share, knowing that, you know, anybody could be listening into the content? Is that something that would go through your mind or go through minds of others that you know, when they're, you know, communicating publicly? Is that the reality? You just have to sort of filter what you're saying to consider, you know, there might be some things that you would discuss, you know, quietly one-on-one with somebody in a private context that you can't do on a podcast. Would that be?
Yeah, actually, it's everyone has to think about what they are saying in China publicly. Just got a filter in mind about everything about politics, or if the topic is quite sensitive, so people will choose not to talk about it publicly. It might get them in trouble. So as a podcaster, of course, and I found it's quite limit our ability to express.
Right. So here in New Zealand, we talk about freedom of speech has been debated, recently with some really extreme views. Uh-huh. And I guess now we're in a world where what's said, you know, it might not be that the government comes down on you, mm-hmm. But there's certainly a lot of public opinion if you say something that a lot of people don't agree with.
Yeah.
But you've got, you know, the broader extent of the role the government plays in there as well, right?
Different pressure.
Yeah. It's a changing world. Mm. Okay. Now, and the next thing we had was some Huawei and ZTE, who have been banned from supplying technology for Australia's new mobile network. So, you know, we're expecting to see a 5G mobile network get established in Australia, likely ahead of us here in New Zealand. They're talking, 2019 for that. And, you know, we've got Spark and Vodafone sort of talking about 2020 here. But the big difference between Australia and New Zealand is here in New Zealand, Huawei, for instance, have a lot of network infrastructure within New Zealand already, and yeah, there's you know, I haven't heard any suggestions about sort of, you know, limiting the involvement of Chinese companies in New Zealand's networks. Although I know that there are I hear comments from time to time from varying channels where people, you know, feel that we should. But yeah, in Australia, it seems as though they're looking to draw a reasonably hard line to block out Huawei and ZTE from being involved in this new fifth generation mobile network.
Yeah,
what are your thoughts on this? Because I understand that one of the reasons for this is legislation in China that requires, you know, I guess, local companies to potentially release information. Mm-hmm. But you know, in New Zealand, we have a look at our networks here. So, you know, our mobile providers, and look, they're forced to also share certain information. If there's a court assigned requirement or a police request to capture a text message, something like that, and these are being used quite legitimately to prosecute people in the past who, you know, most people in New Zealand would agree probably should have been prosecuted, you know, murder type situations and so on. So, yeah. I mean, they're probably quite different in these two cases. But how do you feel? As Chinese person around this sort of these barriers sort of being put up to Chinese companies, and we've seen sort of similar things happening, you know, in the US, particularly under the current government, regime under Trump, where things have been sort of much harder for Russian and Chinese companies to do business in certain areas of the tech sector.
So as a Chinese, I think to talk about this topic, we have to answer two questions. First is, what is 5th generation, the 5G. What's that? What that means? Why it is so important that Australian government banned it from Chinese companies? And the second question is, why Australia? So yeah, it's a these two questions are quite interesting, because I did some I know nothing about 5G at first, but then I read some articles and find it's not just as 3G to 4G just faster and more bandwidth. It's not as simple as that. So it's basically about if we adapt 5G, machine can talk to machine. So it's like the machine could be a requester to request data directly from machine, not human machine interaction, which means take Tesla car, for example. Now they have heaps of sensors all around their car. So while they are doing auto driving, if there are people or other cars, they will detect environment. But it's just based on sensor. So with 5G, that means the other car could have a 5G, and they can talk to each other. So this car could know the speed of that car, and it could avoid traffic accident, and could improve our lives in a fundamentally way. Mm. And it's just one case. So I think that's why all the countries like US, UK, Canada, Australia, China, Japan, they are Korea, they are all quite keen to get a place in 5G. Mm. It's quite competitive. So this is from a technology perspective. But the second thing is why Australia? Because Australia, the Prime Minister of Australia, he's quite I don't know how to say that in English, but in China, everyone said he's ridiculous, you know, because last year he said something in Chinese publicly which Chairman Mao said years ago, decades ago, when China established their government in 1945, that 中国人民从此站起来了, which means Chinese people now stand up. And the Prime Minister of Australia, he said it in Chinese, that Australian now stand up. I think it's just about politics, so political reason. But all the political reason, in my perspective, are the source of it are economy. So all about money. So
yeah, that's all, I mean, it always plays a big part in it. The other thing with the 5G networks is we expect there to be much more sort of smarts or computer processing that actually happens sort of towards the edges of the network or sort of really inside the network rather than people using the network to get to a particular server or a particular place, that we'll have a lot that actually operates sort of within the realms of the network. So there's some quite interesting changes from that perspective. Sophie,
I have to land back to where I am and what I know and just think about any technology has the ability to communicate across borders, and it comes down to that the contractual arrangements. There's good old fashioned trust, and I think that to try and block companies that have great technology because of an underlying political or otherwise fear, I'm not sure that's the best way to necessarily manage it. So I don't think it's a particular problem that New Zealand has Huawei and we have this network infrastructure here, because I suppose I kind of trust the way the contracts work and the way the system works to, protect us, and I suppose how much value is there in that. So I find it a really interesting approach by the Australian government. It'll be interesting to see how it unfolds as well.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly going to be an impact for them when they have to exclude the Chinese companies, and we've only got to look at our ultra fast broadband versus what Australia has, and they've taken a very, very different approach. But in terms of the amount of the billions and billions and billions that they're sort of pouring into delivering something that is pretty disappointing compared to what we have here in New Zealand. And you wonder whether this decision may really sort of stifle innovation, or at least push up what they end up having to throw at it in terms of investment. So
is it a real interesting one to watch, right?
You know, will their mobile networks in the future be as poor as their broadband is today because of this decision? Well, probably not, but there will be some impact, and whether it's a small impact or a large one. That's something I guess we'll see over time. But if you were to ask 10 years ago, how do we think New Zealand will be in our sort of broadband compared to Australia? I don't think there would have been too many people would have predicted just how different they are. Now, a few other things I just want to have a quick chat about. Microsoft Surface Go, that has just launched in New Zealand today, or they've had a sort of a launch event for that. Very interesting to see, because Microsoft have had got various their various tablets, their Surface Pro product and their Surface Books have been pretty popular out there, and multi-billion-dollar business for them, but they haven't really had anything that sort of competes with some of the lower cost or the lower cost iPads. They got emulated with Apple's iPad Pro to some degrees. You could say, with the snap-on keyboard and the stylus, which wasn't something we had sort of expected Apple to do. But now Microsoft have brought this down to a much lower price point. So starting at around $700 in New Zealand, and then you pay for your accessories, for your keyboard and your stylus. So it does build up. But look, I had play with one of them today. And it looks and feels like quite a responsive device. They seem to be putting a really big push into the education market with this as something to be used in schools. And I think the skew here in New Zealand is very much towards Google for the technology that's used in our schools, towards the Google Cloud. Microsoft were a bit slow there in the education sector, and there's certainly a chunk of schools that are using Microsoft Cloud as well, but it's I guess likely here to be those schools that are already in the Microsoft direction that would be looking at this. But I can also see a number of other uses for a tablet that's a bit lower cost, a little bit smaller, and you know, probably not able to replicate everything that your main computer will do, but as an extra sort of device, which tends to be how people use their iPads and and their iPad Pros. There aren't too many people that would, you know, use an iPad Pro in the same way people use a Surface Pro as their entire computer. But this seems like a reasonably smart move.
Sounds good. Anything that runs Word and is light touch and things. I've obviously got an Apple in front of me today, the Pro, but I think that sounds ideal. I've got 2 9-year-olds who in the next couple of years are going to need to get access, and actually the school they're at is Microsoft. So, and you're right, the laptop prices are not weren't that compelling, to be honest. The Google Docs and that option was much cheaper, but they'd run out. We're a bit late. So I think that sounds quite exciting and something that's light touch, and hopefully I can get a super strong case around it so it won't break too easily. Sounds positive.
Yeah, yeah. That's nice. Bear, have you followed the Surface products? What's your thoughts?
No, to be honest, because I'm a typical Apple guy, you know, iPhone, MacBook, and iPad, something like that. So I'm not quite familiar with Surface. Surface, but I think it's always good to have more options. So it's make it with a good competition for that. So if you can choose iPad, it's just make Apple become more lazy about new product developing. So which is now they are doing not as good as they are a few years ago. So yeah, I think that's good. We can have more options for that.
No, I think it's, you know, good move on Microsoft's part. And, you know, look, some of their lower-end Surface products before haven't performed very well. This has is what called the chip in it is called a Pentium Gold, which is a reasonably obscure chip, but it is a, you know, it's lower power, so you need plenty of battery life, but it's certainly not sort of the sort of power that, you know, you might expect in a professional product. It's you know, it's a step down, but, you know, probably quite suitable for, you know, lots of basic uses, and seemed pretty snappy, the one I tried out today. Other gadgets, just to cover off, the Samsung Galaxy Note 9. I've had a good couple of weeks use of that, and did put a little video online about it last week. I guess, you know, for me, this is very much sort of a productivity device. It's, you know, got all the things that people are used to from Samsung's Galaxy S9, which is a, you know, a really, really nice phone. But you just then add on that sort of convenience of the stylus, and you can use that for, you know, even because it's Bluetooth now, you can use it to remotely trigger a selfie or a photo, and you can use it to advance forward PowerPoint slides. So you can use it as sort of clicker if you link it into a projector and you want to run PowerPoints or you know, whatever, you know, other presentation program, then you can, you know, you can do that off the phone. And the other bit, you know, as well as a crazy amount of storage you know, it's got, you've got that option for a half terabyte of built-in storage, and you can upgrade it to a full terabyte. As a fact, you can just, you know, link it up to a big screen and use it as a PC of sorts if you hook in the keyboard and mouse. And that seems to work pretty well. So, you know, I used that the other day. I sort of forced myself to not use my laptop and just use that. And look, there are limitations. There are things where you've got to get workarounds and things that are different. But for those scenarios where you don't have your, you know, full device with you, it's kind of nice to be able to do
it charges super fast as well.
It's got wireless charging, it's got fast charging, it's got a big battery, so you get, you know, long battery life out of it as well. The only sneaky thing was that they are releasing dual SIM versions in some parts of the world, but we again miss out on that sort of stuff here because of our telcos. But for those that are very keen on that, I'm sure there will be a route through which you can find that with parallel imported models and so on. But look, overall, a very very nice piece of technology. And then the other gadgets that have sort of come onto my radar in the last few days were DJI with their Mavic 2, and their, you know, I guess their sort of closest competitor in the drone space, another Chinese company, Unique, Y-U-N-E-E-C, for those who are not familiar with them. They announced a drone last week that looked like it, you know, potentially could be quite a worthy competitor to DJI's Mavic and Mavic 2. What's the other one? Mavic Pro, I think. And the standout for it was it had much longer, you know, battery life. A lot of these drones are sort of around, you know, 15 minutes. Oh. And so they were announcing, you know, their one was about 30 minutes. So it seemed really good. But the one thing that this new one from Unique, the Mantis Q, doesn't have that DJI have is the sort of, you know, collision detection. And so I don't know about anyone else, but when I try and fly one of these things, there's a pretty good chance that, you know, if it's near a tree or near something that it can hit, then I'll probably hit it. So yeah.
And does it warn you and it disables it, or you still have to navigate it?
Well,
to the
Unique one doesn't sort of have the smarts to do that collision avoidance sort of at all, or maybe if there are a couple of drones, you know, I don't know how good its detection gets on smaller things, but you know, but I guess what's happened that sort of made up my mind, because I was thinking, oh, maybe I should buy one of these, you know, Unique ones. We'll have to see what DJI come out with. Well, they, you know, they've announced and launched their new Mavic 2. Well, it has sort of similar battery life, around the half an hour, but it has the collision detection and so on. Yes, it's quite a chunk more, but you know, I think I'd probably step up to get the Mavic 2, so that I'm less likely to
crash it. Is it on your Christmas list, you think, Paul?
I think it could be, yeah.
Note to all listeners, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's two different market, I think, yeah. So DJI, they just aim for professional customers and their products with a high definition camera and really high quality for and long-standing battery. But the other one, Unique Mantis, I think it's especially for Asian market, it's quite a smart move. Of course, you know, all Asian countries, we are crazy about selfie, you know, including Indian, Japan, Korea, China.
I think it's global.
It's everyone, it's every girl and every boy. The most common things you seeing on the street, they are doing selfie. So this could be a new way, a cooler way to do a selfie with a drone. So,
right, because the Unique Mantis Q has this ability to control it through yelling, waving, smiling, whatever. You know, it's got a number of detections. I don't know whether that voice control, you know, works through the remote, or, you know, because drones can make a bit of noise and also get a long way away from you. So, that's kind of, you know, curious to have that voice control element to it, the ability to sort of wave and, yeah, trigger videos and, yeah, having these things sort of follow you. There's some quite nice capabilities, aren't there? So, yeah, if you are, I guess, in the market, it's worth having a look at the latest from both companies. Now, Sophie, on to Sky. So,
yeah.
I'm kind of curious because, look, there are lots of things that we could have talked about to do with Sky, where your technology's going and so on. And
all in the right direction. And, there you go.
And but it was suggested that the first person we need to talk to was you, Sophie. So you're the very first person from Sky TV to come on the New Zealand Tech Podcast.
I'm very excited to be here. I don't have tech in my title, but you never know. Could be something in the future.
Yeah, so I'm keen to sort of, you know, hear what it is that's got you, you know, excited about Sky, and really, you know, talk us through, you know, the importance of your role and you know, obviously the things that have been going on we've heard about in the media recently in terms of Sky taking on those that have been selling little boxes to try and access Sky without paying.
Yeah,
and you know, you've obviously had some success in the courts there, and you know why you think that's so important.
Well, look, it's my pleasure to be here. I am here to predominantly talk about content protection. Why? Because I love content, right? I think it's one of life's joys. I think we should celebrate it. But actually, it takes a huge amount of effort to make great content. So there's a lovely stat around Game of Thrones, one of the most pirated shows on the planet. But from the page to the screen, they talk about 3,589 people being involved in that process. Now, that's a tremendous number of roles. And I think people tend to think about piracy, or it doesn't really matter. It's just me sitting at home. It's a simple click of my finger. Victimless crime. It's only Hollywood studios. Well, actually, it's not. It's all of those people who are involved. So, and actually, it's not just about movies or TV series. It actually impacts one of our prized possessions in New Zealand, whether you like rugby or not. This actually does impact our codes as well. So I'm here to talk about that on behalf of Sky, but also because personally I really care about it. And I do think there needs to be a conversation in New Zealand about this. But the Fibre TV decision, which came from the Christchurch District Court recently, was about these little code boxes, which is this little box that plugs into your TV. And they were sold on the basis that buy this, don't pay for content ever again. Content will be free. And I do feel bad for people because they actually paid over $350.
Those, you know, boxes, when you look at the tech that's inside of them, are worth a fraction of that, right?
In terms of the
actual box, right? And recently I've been using a little this was the Amazon Fire TV stick, and look, that thing's $30. It's got similar technology in it, a fraction of the price. Yeah. And so, you know, there's been, you know, I guess a number of parties that are basically pocketing a whole lot of money for selling you something that's worth a fraction of the price.
Yeah, and so people were misled, right? So the district court said Fair Trading Act, consumers shouldn't be misled, they shouldn't have been selling this. So look, we're excited about that decision. And I suppose that was Sky looking at what it could do onshore. We talked about kind of how the local laws work. You know, the next step for us is to think about, well, these pirate sites that you're talking about, who go and steal the content, that's what it is, they're based offshore. They're both based in different jurisdictions, servers all over the place. So your traditional legal means of going to court isn't going to work. So, the next step for us is to look towards site blocking. Now, late last year, there were obviously some conversations in the press. I don't know if people realise, and that was Sky starting to have the conversation, but with service providers, because actually they're key, because they're going to help give effect to this. You know, site blocking is about a court-ordered process where you prove that sites like the Pirate Bay are not set up for any other purpose than to sell stolen content. You know, it's a great business model if you can do that, give it away, and they make all the ad revenues from it. So, you know, that's been an important thing for us to start to look at, to work with our colleagues. You talked about the telcos. They're the ones who can effectively give effect to this. They're not in any way in the wrong, but they're the ones who can actually, when I search for the Pirate Bay, up pops a page that says, hey, you're not able to access the site because actually it's giving away stolen content. That's what it is. It's not about blocking the internet. It's not about censoring. It's just about that type of conversation. And we think it's really important because, and I will give you a little personal anecdote from the weekend, Paul.
Yeah.
Watching the rugby at some friend's place, and they can afford to pay for TV and things. They have means. And we got into a conversation about what movies are you watching. Even though they do have Sky in the home, the comment was made, no, I'm not pirating. I'm using Putlocker. Now, Putlocker is one of these sites, torrent sites, and they're giving away stolen content. They're making ad revenue from it. And the only people who are benefiting are those criminal networks offshore. So that's why we think it's important going forward that we're going to look at site blocking again, ideally in collaboration with the ISPs, and that's a process we're going through at the moment.
So just stepping back to the Kodi boxes, because really, you know, I don't think sort of, you know, publicly that had a lot of attention in the media until Sky started sort of, you know, taking these things to court and and putting out press releases, whereas now I think, you know, the name Kodi Box has probably, you know, become much more well known you know, because of that. So that's quite an interesting dilemma on your part. And I sort of, you know, wonder when some of these things sort of go to court and get that attention, whether it has a side effect of actually promoting these mechanisms, you know, maybe much more broadly. You know, I totally, you know, understand what you're saying around, the false claims and so on. But how do you weigh that side up and decide, should we just let this go on because not causing too much harm? I mean, I guess in the case of companies that were selling these, they were claiming some pretty big numbers too, right? So was that one of the key triggers for you? Because at what point do you decide, you know, it's worth pursuing this particular thing, or, you know, somebody's, you know, maybe holding their phone to their TV for a stream that other people are paying $50 to see, and then they're sharing it onto, you know, Facebook and so on. Because that was another one where, you know, there's sort of a feeling of, well, I wouldn't have thought of looking on, you know, Facebook, or a lot of people wouldn't have thought of looking on Facebook for streams. Mm. But once it was in the media that, oh, Sky's going after people for this, everyone jumps on Facebook and says, oh, well, we don't have to pay Sky because we've heard all this coverage that we can watch it free on Facebook.
Well, I think you're right. It is part of the challenge. And actually, the objective here wasn't about going after the individuals. It was about these, you know, the MyBox case in particular, and I obviously wasn't there when the decisions were made, but there were outrageous claims being made around, and you know, the numbers that they're selling. So you can't sit back. And also, we knew that consumers were going to be misled. These boxes now, we've been trying to do a demo in the office. It's very challenging because there's been so much disruption offshore of these, you know, these preloaded boxes. So the sites that they track to, they're no longer tracking to, so people actually aren't able to see the content.
So you bought a box, you can't get your free Sky TV.
Correct.
Disappointing.
So, yeah, so I think that actually, from my perspective, and I did this in my prior role, this is a bigger conversation than Sky.
Hmm.
It's a much bigger conversation because it's about,
of course,
value. And I just don't think we can readily accept the normalisation of what is theft or engaging in it, even though it's very easy and it's at home and it's a simple click. So actually, that's where the education and forming and comms piece is absolutely critical, because it does come down to consumer choice.
Yeah, you know? Look, I mean, there's so many aspects to this discussion. And, you know, a couple of things one of the things that, you know, often comes up is, look, you know, if it was just easier to access this content in a legitimate way, then we would pay for it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I hear that from so many people that I talk to. And look, you know, for me, I know enough people that have been involved in or involved in the production of music and TV and film and so on to, you know, to feel as though, look, you know, I'm gonna, you know, back these people by paying for content where I can pay for it. And so, you know, look, I on this one, I probably do stand a bit more on Sky's side than, you know, than I would have on some other discussions to do with Sky from time to time.
But there are lots of great services, right?
Yeah, that
are cost effective.
Look, it's. I guess it has got easier to get content in New Zealand than what it used to be. And I know certainly when we had these discussions a few years ago, you know, we didn't have Netflix in New Zealand. We didn't have Neon. You know, we didn't have
Lightbox,
many choices at all. Whereas now we've got Lightbox that you're promoting now. Thank you.
Look, I'm on the side of content protection, so that means celebrating all of the legal services however you consume them. So, and that they are reasonably priced.
Yeah.
Going forward with the new platform that Sky is going to be launching in the new year, in the next 6 to 12 months, I think the time frame is, the Cisco Infinite Video Platform. Some marketeer needs to come up with a better name potentially. But it is about making sure it's really easy for consumers, whatever the content is they want to watch, to put it onto that one platform. And I suppose the other aspect is, you can trust these platforms. You can trust that the content's being curated, because we're subject to New Zealand laws. And you can trust that when you're watching it, you're not bringing any kind of malware into your home. And I think this is the other part of the conversation.
That doesn't get raised very often,
but I think it's a
really good one, that, you know, people wandering over into some sort of, you know, darker places on the net looking for content,
right?
You know, can get sucked into, you know, all sorts of issues from a security standpoint. So, I mean, that's a fair one. I guess there's also the aspect, though, of just of, for those that are comfortable with accessing content through these sorts of mechanisms, that it just puts you more offside with a group who are going to, shake their fists even more at Sky TV. So, you know, there's just an element of upsetting people and pissing them off because of, that you're going out and trying to block things. And we know you can't entirely block anything and shut it down, right? So,
you think it's
worth doing.
We do think it's worth doing because the overseas experience says, the results are impressive. You're absolutely right. There's a spectrum. There are the people who will always circumvent and will say, the internet needs to be free. This, you're right, site blocking in that context isn't going to work for them. But actually, for a big majority of people, some of whom don't know that they're actually looking at pirated content, we think it is a really important tool. It's used in over 42 countries in the world. And in Australia, the recent review they've done, they've seen that actually visits to the key pirate sites has dropped by 50%. So it's quite impressive stats by quite a simple measure that we're hoping won't be troublesome for our ISPs to implement. And we do think actually, this is an important conversation to be having. And we're having it with our broadcast colleagues. So, at TVNZ and at MediaWorks, also with Spark. So it's an ongoing conversation and we think it's really important. So that's why we're going to lead the charge on it.
Hmm. So what's next?
What's next? Well, actually, there is some really interesting research I just wanted to pick up on that we looked at how many people are pirating. And just on the site blocking point, of those who admit to being regular pirates, 44% of them say they would still support some form of blocking because actually more should be done. They kind of know it's not fair. And, there is still piracy is still very prevalent. And a lot of people are doing it, some of them unwittingly, others knowingly. One of the stats that we've come up with, which is deeply concerning, is 8% of New Zealanders are regularly pirating live sports streams. So it's 300,000 people who sort of think, oh, well, that's fine. And I suppose our overall message on that is, hey, stop for a moment. And I'm not just talking about Sky's bottom line. I'm just talking about the talent, the people involved in this industry. It takes time, it takes effort, and it does take investment. So we're hoping that Kiwis want to play fair.
Doesn't that just cater to different people at different points? Like if we were chatting before we started, I think, about iFlix in Asia, who've got a Netflix or a Neon-like sort of service.
Yep.
That's a fraction of the price because you've got the economies in some of these countries, Indonesia and so on, aren't such that people would ever pay what we pay for sort of streaming. So isn't there an aspect of for those who maybe can't afford to pay the full price of Sky or something, that this gives them a sort of a way of being on a more level playing field so that they can still watch sport even though they don't have the money in their pocket because they're struggling just to feed their families?
I understand that, those economic drivers, and they're really challenging. I'm not going to say that's easy to solve. One little plug. So FanPass, which is our online sport product, is now on mobile. It's just under $16 a month. So we think that's quite a big shift. Yes, it's the smaller screen. It's probably on the
sort of crouching around your.
Well, you'll be surprised in my household.
We all
seem to. No, I understand. So look, those things, but we do think there are a bigger tranche of the population at the moment who we need to have a conversation with. Mm. And so that's why the comms piece, you played our new virtual reality game, Copycat Combat. It's just about engaging the public. It's not about taking people to court. And we're going to be taking that around schools and to sports clubs and getting people to play so we can talk to them. And Bear, I think you got more points than Paul on the game before this podcast. So well done.
Yeah.
Does that, you're a better content protector.
We had a VR game before we started our podcasting today.
Just like a warm up.
Exactly.
Kind of interesting. Yeah.
Cool.
Look, I think, yeah, there's lots that we can talk about on this. Look, what I really appreciate is that, yep. Sky is certainly, communicating, I think, a bit more now with, I guess the community on some of these things. And, I hope that will, that will continue. There's obviously other discussions to have around where the technology is going. And, we'll look forward to having some, further chats with some others within sort of Sky on some of those aspects.
Sounds good. And the feedback, from your community is important because actually, that's how we get better. So thank you for letting me share some of those thoughts.
Yeah, no, that's good. And you raised some good things. Were there anything that you wanted to add to that discussion, Bear?
Yeah. It's just like while you're talking, I'm thinking about piracy and same thing in China. And like Game of Thrones and other American TV shows, which is also quite popular in China, even though there are no official products in China. So based on piracy and a subtitle group, which helped a lot to translate all the subtitle. Mm-hmm. From English to Chinese, so that China audience can understand what they are talking about, and they are so developed that now for Game of Thrones when releasing in America, maybe just a few hours later, there will be a high definition version. Gosh. And you can download from China. But I noticed that which Sophie said one point is. It's very important that you might got something illegal from that content. Even that content is originally legal. Let's give an example that Game of Thrones, when they release it from the piracy website, the first version of that content will add something. Will guide you to some gambling website or other illegal website, and it's probably will you may lost a lot of money or security problems will something like that, and you don't know if there are some frames they will add something, so there are some it's kind of like you don't know because before that I've heard a girl downloads some romance TV shows and watch that, and while she's watching, she watched some horrible frame.
So they splice some other content through.
It's like a practical joke or something, but it's really feels not good. And I think
so that sort of control sort of gets lost, doesn't it, when and you've got no sort of point where you can go back to address that when it's it's just being coming through those channels.
The criminals don't care what you're watching, right?
So I think people, if there are accountable provider and with not cheaper, just a reasonable price. People will willing to pay that money for the good content. But the other issue I'm thinking about is at this age, the boundary between consumer and creator, it's blurring. Mm. So it's like in media industry, this is probably not a big issue because the content are created by professional groups of people, so with a large budget of money, but for other individual creators, it's quite tricky to deal with piracy, and it's kind of like it's developing too fast to catch up. To take on, so
that's quite an interesting thought, because I think we usually think of piracy and its impact on big media organizations, nameless, faceless corporations that are a million miles away, and we don't know anybody that works for them, and we certainly wouldn't have those people sitting across the room in our podcast or hang out and chat to them at all. But when it's your mate that's producing some content, or a family member or friend, then it's starts to become a little bit easier to relate to, doesn't it? And you know, I guess we have to realize that. There's more and more people that are involved in the in the content process, and there are lots of livelihoods that are involved. It'll be very interesting to actually put together the number of people in New Zealand whose livelihoods are directly tied to some form of media, whether it's something as every day as sort of the news, whether it's live sport, whether it's TV production, and then
music,
all of the other many areas that are sort of in between, with music and caterers that are looking after film crews and cleaners, and there's just so many jobs, and just looking locally that tie back to these things. And obviously the more piracy there is, then the pressure that sort of puts on across the sector.
That's exactly right. It's not just a big faceless corporation. It's actually individuals, and a lot of them are behind the camera, so you don't necessarily see them, but their roles are absolutely vital. And I've been along to some of our sports matches. We all take it for granted the way highlights put together. The talent of some of these guys and the speed with which they do stuff and their decision making is awesome. So that's what today is about, to have that conversation from our perspective. And I think it'll be really interesting at some stage, Bear, you mentioned blockchain, to kind of see how that will work, because maybe that for individuals will actually be a bit of a transitional moment. I know it's a little ways off, but it was really interesting that you mentioned that, because I have heard about it
probably
before.
Based on smart contracts so that individuals can sell their content.
They can control it, can't they?
They can control it. It will be
get the benefit of their effort. That's what we like.
Much better future.
That's great. Well, we've run out of time for this episode, so we'll probably be keen to have you back, Bear, to talk a little bit more about China at some stage, because I know we had a couple of other things we're keen to chat about. So we'll have to do that again. And so thank you for joining the show. Now, if people want to follow you online, how do they track you down? Is it sort of Twitter, LinkedIn? Where are you easiest to contact?
The easiest way is to find me on LinkedIn. So just search Bear Liu. BEARLIU, and you got me there.
Excellent. And Sophie, thank you very much for coming in.
I've got more, Paul, that I can share, so I might be back. I'll be banging down your door. And I'm only on LinkedIn in terms of social media, but if anyone wants to email, they certainly can, or get in touch. Very happy to hear direct feedback too. So look, thank you very much for having me.
That's great. Well, it's been it's been good to have the conversation, and look forward to further engagement with Sky. Because realistically, you're absolutely key player in our media segment now. And look, things are changing, but we want to hear what's happening, and hopefully things keep going in a good direction here. So.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Good stuff. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening in. You can track me down online across Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter at Paul Spain. And we'll be back in with another episode next week. So we'll catch you then. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
阅读、科技、旅行，生活可以很大。对话设计、学习、思考不嫌太多。这里是 iTunes 获奖播客《狗熊有话说》，一听就停不下来的哦。